were romancing about the good old days last night, and one of the few features of the good old days, as I remember, was Mum flourishing a wooden spoon when she decided we kids were being naughty. Of course, we never were naughty. But I also remember being stood up in front of the class with my hand out and being belted across the palms with a ruler. No one batted an eyelid at corporal punishment then. But times have changed. The ABC's drama series The Slap sparked the debate all over again, along with questions about how do we discipline children appropriately. Michael Carr-Grigg is an adolescent psychologist specialising in adolescent and mental health, and he joins me now. Good morning, Michael.
Good morning, Nicole.
Were you ever given a whack as a child?
I was.
I was.
My father was a, he's still alive and he's 92 and possibly listening to this.
Tread carefully, young man.
I'd better. he was of the old school, and that was one that children should be seen and not heard, and that if you got out of line, you were given a warning, and if you continued to transgress, then you'd probably get a whack.
I must have missed that warning part.
Yeah.
Well, and there are those who would argue that there's nothing wrong, and I imagine also your dad, with giving a child a light whack on the bottom if the child is being naughty. Why doesn't that fly anymore?
Oh, look, just because it's an ineffective way of disciplining people, and the research has shown that basically what happens is it creates what we call revenge fantasies. I particularly remember this from my experience at school of being caned, whereby not only did that become a bit of a badge of honour, but it also just built up resentment and made you feel your sense of social justice overwhelmed you, and you didn't actually learn anything. So, look, I think there are better ways in which young people can get the message, and better ways for adults to teach young people what is appropriate behaviour.
Don't you actually learn, though, when that happens to you, not to repeat the behaviour?
No, because basically many times you feel, or sort of I felt, that it was unjust, that it wasn't warranted, and that I'd either been set up by my brother or sister, there was just a sense of, right, well, I'm going to get back, and there was nothing learned.
And yet you seem to have come out the other side, Michael Carr-Grigg, you know, successful, happy, well-adjusted.
Oh, look, I mean, it wasn't a constant feature of my life. I can probably count on the fingers of one hand the number of times I've actually whacked. But there are, of course, other people who grew up in very, very authoritarian homes where violence, physical violence and verbal abuse was a constant. In fact, some people tell me that that was the language of their relationship, and clearly that hasn't helped them and has created great problems for them later on in life.
If you've got a question for Michael Carr-Grigg, 1300 800 222, or you can text me on 0437 774 774. I've got a text from the Mad Maori in Bendigo. I'm the father of 11 children, and I still believe a smack on the bum or the hand is appropriate.
Yeah, look, I mean, one of the things that I think is very important is we have to distinguish between belting people with an implement around the head and a tap on the bum. Now, I have to confess that I think I had a 3.5-year-old once who ran across the road, and I remember just in my sheer frustration and rage and shock, I sort of gave him a tap on the bum. I don't think he's traumatised as a result of that. So I think we have to make a distinction between that and a constant physical barrage.
So what you're saying, though, Michael Carr-Grigg, or clarify this for me, a tap on the bum is okay?
As far as I'm concerned, it's not ideal, but I don't think people who do it should be criminalised as a result. And I'm a little bit different from some child psychologists who just absolutely rail against it.
Well, they'd say that's child abuse.
Well, they'll say it's a slippery slope, but look, I just think that there is no such thing as a perfect parent, and it's very, very tricky to bring up kids in 2012, and I think we have to be forgiving. It's not the most effective way of disciplining children. There are two techniques which have been proven beyond all doubt to be far more effective, and that is, one, noticing every single time a kid gets it right, and two, time out. And if you talk to the experts around the globe on what are the ways in which we can get most out of our kids in terms of teaching them how to behave properly, those are the two techniques that work best.
How does time out work? I mean, what do you do if your child is, say, becoming physically abusive?
Well, I think that it depends upon the individual circumstances. The idea behind time out is a simple consequential learning, and that is that you get the child to associate, if you make this particular choice, then every single time you make this choice, time out will happen. And that isn't pleasant for you. It's not going to reinforce the behaviour, and it's simply going to say to the young person, well, I've experienced this now four or five times. I know that every time I make that choice, there'll be an unpleasant consequence, so it's not worth making the choice. I need to make another choice.
And so time out means relocating the child in a place which is quiet, where he or she is alone?
Ideally, where there's no stimulation. It was kind of popularised by a commercial TV show, Super Nanny, which you might remember. And basically what she was doing was arguing that natural consequences are best, and that I think if you look at the sort of behaviour that many of those children were showing, which was just making bad choices, being disruptive, and they had wrapped their parents around their fingers. And essentially you had a situation where the tail was wagging the dog. This is a really good skill for parents to learn. And most kids, in most circumstances, when they're not, say, major developmental problems, major psychological problems, they'll find that this works incredibly well.
Michael Carr-Greg, a texter, says, my son was locked in a small room at primary school, no bigger than a toilet, and now he has his own problems. He didn't even go to high school, and I'm sure that this has affected him.
Yeah, well, I mean, the whole issue of whether or not and how to use timeout in a primary school setting is a very vexed issue, because, of course, you don't always have teachers making good decisions about how to do that, and sometimes it can slip over to humiliation. The idea of being locked in a cupboard is awful. I remember at my boarding school, and I went to boarding school at seven, I was in England and in a very, very cold winter, and the punishment for talking after lights out was basically to be taken out of that dormitory, and you were made to stand on a wicker basket, and that was up to an hour, and that was humiliating, cold, painful. Promise you, you didn't do it twice.
Mm, but it's something that has stayed with you nonetheless. You wouldn't recommend that sort of behaviour in contemporary times. What sort of impact can that... I mean, I know you don't do it twice, but what sort of damage can that sort of approach have?
Oh, again, I think it was the revenge fantasies and, you know, a feeling of, at that time, that you were being picked on because there were about five or six other people talking, and, you know, I remember thinking, well, I wonder why I was chosen. Mm. But look, I think one of the things about time out is the ideal situation is that the child is still in sight, but not being stimulated by whatever it is that caused them to have the bad choice in the first place. And I think it's very, very important that we don't humiliate, we don't make the child feel wrong. The idea is that we get the child to understand that there's nothing wrong with them, but the choices they made, the behaviour that they made, was simply unacceptable.
We're talking to Michael Carr-Greg. If you've got a question for him, 1300 800 222. And Bill has rung in from Port Melbourne. Good morning, Bill.
Good morning. Good morning.
Do you have a question for Michael Cargreave?
No, it's not a question. It's just that I disagreed with all that he was talking about, that that the corporal punishment doesn't change anything. It certainly changed me, and I deserved much more than I ever got. I would have taken over the whole school if I hadn't, if the cane hadn't been, if I hadn't been threatened with the cane. The threat of the cane was something that kept me in line, and that was the only thing that would have. Anything else, writing so many lines on the board, that would have been just, you know, something that all, would have been like water off a duck's back.
That's a powerful contention, I guess, Michael Cargreave, given that it's come from the receiver of that sort of punishment.
Oh, no question. The difficulty is that it's now illegal. The society in which we live has deemed that there are better, more effective ways of controlling the behaviour of children, and therefore the authorities in their wisdom have decided that that's not an option. And that time out, where we remove a child from a situation that is dangerous or where a child is exhibiting behaviour that's unacceptable, is more appropriate.
So when you tap your three-year-old on the bottom because he bolts across the road, are you breaking the law?
No, because the law allows for what's known as reasonable chastisement. I was referring specifically to the use of a cane. So, for example, in the olden days, the clip around the head was regarded as acceptable. What we now know is that that's fraught with danger. A child's head is a very delicate mechanism. You could damage your child permanently. And, you know, my colleagues in psychology who argue that no hitting is acceptable are worried that in someone's rage, the tap on the bottom might become a tap on the head.
There's a question from a texter, Maggie, who says, do you believe that attention deficit disorder arises from lack of discipline when a child is very young?
No. Attention deficit hyperactivity disorder or ADD has a physiological basis. There's now growing evidence from MRI scans that children who exhibit that type of behaviour have specific structures in their brain that aren't present in children who don't exhibit this behaviour. So no, I don't think that you can put that specific syndrome down to anything other than a developmental issue.
Fred from Gunalda has rung in. Good morning, Fred.
Good morning, Nicole. Good morning. Learned one. I'd like to say that I think one of the biggest problems in society these days is we've got too many pointy-headed academics laying down rules that are possibly detrimental to society. Now, I'm well advanced in life. I was flogged mercilessly by a very sadistic mother. I certainly got my share of cuts at school, and I deserve them. I don't question that. I never, ever carried that through my life. When my kids came along, I've had a very successful marriage, which would fuse sand into glass. And my kids all got reasonable, sensible discipline, always in cold blood. You never administer discipline when you're really angry, because then it can lead to problems. I coached football. I did lots of things, and I could discipline kids and get good results. Without firm discipline, kids do not develop self-discipline. And if you haven't got self-discipline, you cannot succeed in life. So it is my belief that this namby-pamby attitude, by all means, lock up people who abuse their kids. There's a difference between discipline and vicious cruelty, and that must be stopped at all times. But unfortunately, you can't go behind closed doors. But the rules we are presenting to people today, we're developing a very undisciplined, very self-indulgent younger class that is only going to come to their own self-destruction.
I guess those rules were developed because the research showed that if you hit children, sometimes that can teach children to become hitters themselves, and that punishment, that sort of physical punishment, can distract children from learning how to resolve conflicts themselves, and that that sort of very violent punishment can interfere with the bond between the parent and the child. So there are lots of reasons why pointed-headed academic...
you know, namby-pamby. Namby-pamby, pointy-headed academic.
Yeah, I guess that's why they've made the rules that they have and the authorities have accepted them.
Thank you, Fred. Peter has called in from Ararat. Good morning, Peter.
How you going?
Good, how are you?
Good, thanks. I tend to agree with both the last previous callers for the simple reason he is a namby-pamby. He's a do-good and righteous, educated, so-so. As far as I'm concerned, I was like the other gentleman. I was given the six of the best at school. I was given a good smack on the behind at home, kick on the behind if I needed it, and it never did me any good. It never did me any harm. Sorry, and I believe that I am successful now because of the discipline that I was given when I was younger. So I believe that they've got to get out into the real world and have a look at it, because today the kids are running riot and it's all because there's no discipline.
Michael?
Yeah, I think there are lots of reasons why kids are running riot, and while a lack of consequential learning may well be one of them, I think there are lots of other reasons. For example, young people are hitting puberty now earlier than ever before. In 1901, kids hit puberty at 16. Now it's 10.2. That's had a major effect on their lives. Their families aren't as intact. We've got a divorce rate where the fastest growing family unit in Australia is now the step family. And by 2020, there will be more step families in Australia than nuclear families. We've got a lack of ritual, a lack of tradition, a lack of spirituality. We've got a digital age where this is the first bunch of kids who have been in touch with each other 24 hours a day. I mean, there are lots of different reasons why we've got bad behaviour, but we've also got a news media that focuses, with apologies to you, Nicole, almost exclusively on when kids do bad things. We very rarely talk about the time when kids do great things.
Isn't what Peter says, though, doesn't it have a grain of truth to the extent that you also, all of the points you make are valid, Michael Cargreg, but isn't it also valid that children need very clearly defined boundaries? And if they are mollycoddled, that they don't ever see those boundaries or understand those boundaries, and you do have this problem with disillusionment and troubled youth?
Look, I've written, I think, now 8 books on parenting, and in every single one of them I've argued that there is a trend towards parents not setting limits and boundaries, not being consistent, creating this culture of indulgence, and I've railed against that. But that doesn't mean that we then have to resort to physical punishment, because I think that tends, not to work, which is something that people don't sort of necessarily accept. But it also sends the dangerous and, I think, somewhat worrying message that might makes right, that it's acceptable to hurt someone else, and that's a good way to resolve conflict. It's a good problem-solving issue. And I think we run a risk that we then become desensitised to violence. So the overwhelming argument used by child psychologists is that there are better ways to do it. Now, back in the olden days, my father, his generation, weren't aware of that. And I think what we have to do is look at what the science tells us. And we know that noticing every time a kid gets it right, and basically using timeout, are more effective than whacking kids.
But noticing when kids get it right, doesn't that contribute to this culture of indulgence, which you say is part of the problem?
No, I think you've got to use that judiciously. You still set limits, you still set boundaries. One of the things that I have argued for a long time is that we have to set boundaries over things that matter. So, for example, I think you could probably light up all the major cities in Australia over parents who spend a lot of energy screaming at their kids for not having their room sort of pristine. Don't know if that ever happened to you, but the reality is that no one's ever died of an untidy room. there are issues that you need to basically die on the hill for. And to me, those are the issues that relate to the young person's safety. Sex, drugs, alcohol, sleep, internet, exercise, diet, those are the issues, the big ones. I think parents tend to, you know, get into a flap over everything, and then they set themselves up, particularly with teenagers who are, of course, in the process of establishing their identity. So I think we've got to be very careful. Yep, big ones, boundaries and limits, but I think it's the way in which we execute them that's important.
According to one texter, my daughters are about 30 years old, both married with children, both very successful careers, both very happy, both were never, never smacked, but they were loved into good behaviour. Gillian has rung from Burnie. Good morning, Gillian.
Good morning. The point that struck me as important, in the old days of children should be seen and not heard, there was no relationship whatsoever between the adults and children except authority and the minor, well, the one without power, which wasn't good because you avoided the grown-ups when you could. But this idea that time out makes people think, well, if I keep doing this, it's not a good idea, I better do something else, strikes me as equally bad because it doesn't teach the child the effect of its behaviour is having. I mean, no consideration for other people, no politeness, no manners, no nothing. And today I think the children can't be blamed. The home life is so different from when I was brought up. There isn't a standard mother and father and the mother's at home. I'm not suggesting that's what it should go back to. But there's no security there. And the type of child that wants to be noticed starts showing off in all directions just to attract attention.
Thanks, Gillian. Michael, what do you think?
Look, I think the thing about time out is that it's got a couple of steps before you just isolate the child. You have to give the kid the opportunity to change their behaviour. So you explain to them what it is that they're doing wrong. If that effort fails, then you simply tell the child that they have to go for time out. You select a quiet and relatively safe area away from the other children, away from stimulus, and then you tell the child how long the timeout will be, but you explain that you'll only basically begin the timeout when the child quietens down. You ignore bad behaviour while in timeout, and you focus the kid on positive activity after the timeout. So the point is, it's a process where the kid learns how to behave appropriately.
Jim has rung in from Donnybrook. Good morning, Jim.
I consider I've successfully raised four sons. I reckon that it's really horses for courses. I mean, somewhere in this middle ground lies the solution. And I think certainly our first son needed those clear boundaries made because he's always testing the boundaries. And whereas my second son, you could have sort of brought him up, led him with a silken cord, so to speak.
And did you smack your first child, Jim?
Certainly, yeah. I always had that there as a last resort, that they were also very intensely loved as well. I think you've got to be prepared to love and withdraw that love as well.
Michael?
Yeah, look, I mean, I think that any parenting strategy that's supported by a strong foundation of love and respect, that's a very, very effective way to bring about commendable behaviour based on strong inner values and has been proven over time to work with some kids. The difficulty with this discussion is that there is no one-size-fits-all. My children are a result of 23 of my chromosomes, 23 slightly imperfect chromosomes from my partner, and the genetic roll of the dice. No one child is the same. And I guess one of the things that I urge all parents to do is become the world expert in their kids, understand their self-talk, understand their temperament, their personality, and parent accordingly.
Greg has rung in from Southwest Victoria. Good morning, Greg.
How are you, Nicole?
Good, how are you?
Good. But just first question I'd like to ask is, does your guest actually have children of his own? Because it sounds to me like this has all been based on survey studies and...
Yeah, you're starting to break up, Greg, but the basic tenet of your question is, does Michael have children of his own? And this all sounds like it's come from an academic pointy head. I think the earlier complaint was Michael.
Yes, I do. I have two children and, you know, two very different children. And I think that's a bit of a cop-out. It's sort of like if people don't like an argument, they say it's politically incorrect. And I think that's begun to lose its clout. Of course, I have had children and I understand how difficult it is to parent. I think what's interesting about this discussion is that you can't walk away from the fact that there is a better, more effective way of parenting. Just because you don't necessarily agree with that doesn't necessarily mean that it's wrong.
We've got a message from Nana the Trucker. Nicole, he's kidding himself if he thinks that crap works. Thank you, Nana. And then she texts again, kids are taught their rights and rarely their responsibilities to earn that right. What do you think about Nana Trucker's comments, Greg?
Oh, look, I mean, it all comes back to the old, I think it was a phrase in the Bible, spare the rod and spoil the child, which is basically all about punishment. And I still argue that given the fact that the research says it distracts children from learning how to resolve conflict in an effective and humane way, we do have to look at better ways. I think persistently punished children, particularly my clients, can become preoccupied with those feelings of anger, and that can be deprived of the opportunity to learn more effective ways of solving life's problems in the future. And surely as parents, the single most important thing is for us to build citizens who can A, parent well themselves, but also can function in an increasingly stressful society.
Michael Carr, Greg, we've seen the dilemma raised by the situation on the ABC drama The Slap. Have you seen that?
Yeah, wasn't that good?
Mm.
Look, I mean, that's fascinating because it raises the issue of, is it okay to slap other people's children?
Mm. How do you deal with other people's children if they're monstering you?
My particular view is that you don't have the right to discipline other people's children, but you do have the right to get their parents to intervene on your behalf. And hitting another person's child is fraught with difficulties, apart from the legalities.
Mm.
There's just better ways to deal with things. Again, you've got the whole violence thing. Is violence an acceptable problem-solving device? I say they're better ones. And, you know, you can move children away, you can isolate them, you can gently lead them away to a more isolated place, particularly if they're upset and it's a fraught situation emotionally.
If you bring the child's misbehaviour to the attention of the child's parent or parents, though, you're in a situation where you may well just bring more grief on yourself.
It depends on the way in which you do it. If you say, Johnny seems to be upset, that's completely different from saying your kid just punched another kid in the face. I think there are ways in which you can do it, and you have to gauge the parents and presumably know how they're going to respond. It's very, very tricky, but I don't think you can go around whacking other people. Would you ever, in your wildest dreams, at a party, discipline another child?
No.
I wouldn't either.
Because as a parent, if that happened to me, if anybody touched my child, whatever the child was doing, my immediate instinct is to protect the child and to see the attacker as an aggressor.
And the other issue is you do not know what the psychological state of that particular child is.
Mm.
You may well be dealing with someone with a pervasive developmental disorder that may have some psychological problem that you're unaware of.
Mm. And roughing them up isn't the answer. Anil has rung in from Queensland. Good morning, Anil.
How are you tonight?
Good, thank you.
Yeah, look, you need to be commended again. I'm so glad you actually brought this up. I think corporal punishment really doesn't work. it sort of sets up a foundation to teach the young ones that it's okay to resort to problems with physical violence.
Were you subjected to corporal punishment when you were growing up, Anil?
I got the smack on the bum, right, by the old man when I sort of, like, you know, there was one occasion when I ran out on the road and, like what the fella was saying before, you know, like, I scared the hell out of the old man so badly that, you know, I got the smack on the bum. When I was at school, I got the cane, six of the best, twice. And on the first occasion, my mum turned up at the school and, like, told the teacher straight up, "You do not strike my child." And she was, like, basically, you know, dismissed the little woman. And on the second occasion when it happened, my old man turned up. Now, like, my old man, he was a fireman, and he was 6'4", 15 stone, no fat. He was a really big man. And the deal was this, you know, if you ever strike my child again, right, well, I'll discipline you. Now, when I got home after this incident, both of my parents sat me down and they said, "Listen, we've gone into bat for you, right, and we have given our word that you will sort it out and behave yourself in class." Now, the couple of times that I did fall off the wagon, I'll be absolutely honest, the disappointment in my mother's eyes, I'll tell you now, hey, you know, I only ever got that look twice, right, and I sure as hell made sure that I never, ever set up an opportunity again so she had to look at me with that look in her eyes, you know. Now, all these blokes that are going on saying about, you know, the pointy-headed academics and you know, I'd honestly like to say thank God for the academics in our society because, you know, we're a bloody society of dinosaurs.
What do you want to say about being a pointy-headed academic, Michael Cargreaves?
Or a namby-pamby parent? Well, I think that was beautifully articulated, and I thank you for the call. I mean, I think the reality is that the moment you unleash violence on somebody else's child, you are basically playing with fire, and you are endangering yourself because you do have no control over what the other adults can do. So it's all in all not a wise strategy.
Michael Cargreaves, it has been a fascinating conversation. Thank you so much for kicking it off for us this morning, and I'll let you get back to your namby-pamby pursuits.
Thank you very much.
Lovely to talk to you. That is Michael Cargreaves, who is a adolescent psychologist specialising in adolescent mental health.